Episode number one with Rob. Welcome to In It to Win It. I am your host, Steve Barton, and I am here with Daniel Garcia. Dan, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, man, always great to be here, Steve. Wonderful host, thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. Returning guest, Daniel, and we've got Rob Barr this week. I'm really excited about this guy. He's I feel like you and I have been playing checkers our whole life, and then this guy's just been playing chess. And
No. I want to make that a clear distinction. That was Connect Four.
Oh, Connect Four. Yes. Okay, we've been playing Connect Four, and considering it a win if we got like three in a row. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Just want to make that distinctively clear.
Yes. Yeah, it was like I think we were talking yesterday. It's like if I really want to feel shitty about myself, you know, we need to bring Rob in. This guy's just on a whole nother level.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's on. You know, like we're. Yeah, it was. After speaking with you, I was like, wow. Hey, maybe just should have spent some more time not at the party.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a little less time on Netflix and a little more time like doing something.
Yeah, that 4-hour work week, taking naps and stuff. Nah, clearly not working out as well.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah,
that's so true.
No, it was good to hear the bio and everything. Just sounds like he had a lot of great information. So I believe he'll be able to communicate. Hopefully, that with a lot of people. And just seems like a really cool all around person with a wealth of information.
Yeah, yeah. He's an accredited investor. He's got a bunch of vacation rentals.
Yeah,
his basic day job is a financial advisor, planning for people's retirement and setting up college funds, and you know, and he seems to be into stocks and all that. He lives down in Honduras too. That's kind of cool. He was born in America and then he went down to Honduras and he lives there now. And it's
tax shelter.
Yeah, yes. Tax shelter. Hashtag tax shelter.
I wasn't too far away over there. I was in Bucaramanga, but
that's right. You just got back from Colombia.
Yes, yes, yes. Got back from Colombia. Yep. During the whole COVID thing, it was definitely some essential travel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because, you know, you're supposed to essentially only travel if it's essential. So
yes. Now you had to get a COVID test before you left, right?
Right, right. So yeah, I was actually kind of stressed out because they opened the country. Well, initially in September, my flight got canceled again. So the third time, well, luckily it was the charm. Had to have a rapid test, kind of hard to do here in California during that time period. Now it's a little bit more common, obviously, but back about a month ago, it was not. So you have to get a test within 96 hours and results of leaving and provide that to the country of Colombia. So was able to do that. Yeah. So I was able, they let me in. So, okay. You know, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, so that make sure I don't have syphilis or anything as well. But yeah, I was okay. Yeah.
Full screening.
Yeah, a little screening process.
Bend over and cough.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I have to admit, they kind of handled the whole thing a lot better than we did. And I don't know if you want to consider it a second world country, almost a third. But yeah, I mean, they were clean your shoes, everything was super clean, temperature checked, ID, like, I mean, wherever you go, the poorest person collecting trash has a mask on. I'm like, wow, this is clearly different from the United States.
when you came back into the U.S., they didn't require a test, right?
Well, here's the thing. I was stressed out. I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh, I got to get this wrapped. So a girlfriend of mine there, she helped me do all the, you know, get me a rapid test.
Yeah.
I was able to do so, you know, I had paperwork, you know, cause it doesn't say anything on the embassy site or, you know, to enter the, you know, there's no Google really at that time for it, which was only like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I was actually kind of stressed out, like, oh my God, what do I need? And So anyways, had my paperwork. Hey, I don't have the vid. I'm free of it. You know, here's my paperwork. got an email to show it, and literally hopped off the plane in a 737 with maybe, I don't know, like three, what does that thing hold? Like 350 people or something.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, Panama, Central America. I just walked right through LA. I could have walked right through butt naked with sores on my body. I don't think anybody would said anything, you know, like this.
Like, I'm raging, like, raging syphilis right now. Let that man through. Let him through.
I got open sores everywhere. Come on. Literally, it was just like, I think that, like I said, there was some hand sanitizer on the customs agent's desk. Nobody asked me anything. I was so like dumbfounded. I'm like sitting there, like literally on the street going, nobody asked me if I was had a temperature, like, are you, you know, maybe I got a text message from T-Mobile said, hey, you might want to think about not sharing too close of contact with anyone for the next 2 weeks. That's about as good as it got. So clearly that they handle a lot better than the state of California does.
Yes. Yeah.
Your phone company. And I don't know if anybody, doesn't matter what side you're on, but you know, if we're all going to do one thing or the other, it's like, hey, well, you know, I don't know, close it out, you know, at least like, you know, international travel, at least have a test, you know, I don't know, just saying, putting it out there. So very interesting, but yeah, so that's the story.
You were telling me another one, and I was like, let's save this one for the podcast. You mentioned that, I don't mean to be sad or anything, but your grandma
passed away not too long ago. Yes,
she passed away not too long ago. Yes. You know, you had a nice service for her and everything.
Yes,
and yes. There was a deacon that made a speech that was pretty impressionable on you, right?
Oh yeah, yes, that was So you know, I cared for my grandma. Of course, you know, we're very close and everything. Don't want to make light of it, but. Yeah, it was the most interesting thing being at the service because I had planned the whole service. I made it as beautiful as possible, you know. I even hired a singer with this angelic voice and, you know, it was very traditional Catholic, you know, and we carried the casket, white gloves, you know, it was very, it was a very beautiful service.
Yeah. And you're close to your grandma, like your mom, right? I mean, literally took care of her for the last year and a half of her life. Like, you know, she's bedridden and you took care of her.
No, absolutely. I was very, you know, right there the whole time. So yeah, it wasn't an easy thing, but as we had the service, you know, it was really kind of interesting. I don't want to make light of this in any way, but it is a bit of a story. So we're sitting there and I have a cousin next to me, aunts, uncles, you know, there's people from all over town. And then there's the, you know, who I thought was a priest at the time, but turns out that he's a deacon.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, he's making a service. And,
man of the cloth.
Yeah, man of the cloth, you know, speaking. And Dora was a great person in the community and da da da. And then he starts giving details. Okay. Details of, he goes, yes, and you know, when you pass her home at, you know, such and such Aliso Street, you know, you're going down the street right when you're coming down the hill, and like describing the house a little too much in detail, you know, and I'm
the interior
and
I'm sitting, of it.
Yeah, I'm like the color, like she says something about, like, I mean, it was like you'd only know that if you've been to the house, right?
Yeah.
And then he starts saying how he's not a priest and how he's a deacon. I'm like, what does this have to do with my grandmother's wedding? I mean, excuse me, a wedding, but her memorial service here. And he goes, you know, as a deacon, I can be, you know, married. I'm not a priest. And he's trying to distinguish between the two. And I'm like, what does this have to do with the service? And all of a sudden, like, I'm starting to get the idea that the deacon was like dating my grandmother and possibly banging her at some point in time. I looked at my cousin. I'm like, are you thinking the same thing I'm thinking? And she's like, yeah, this is really strange. I'm like, where is this deacon from? I think he was dating my grandmother.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was very awkward. It was the most awkward like moment I think I've had in quite some time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, sitting here having this memorial for like your grandmother, you know, and like all of a sudden you kind of like get the funny intuition that you're the deacon is possibly, you know, has dated her. And I wasn't the only one thinking that, because I turned to my cousin who's sitting next to me and she's looking at me and I'm like, you thinking what I'm thinking? And she's like, yeah, this is very strange.
Yes.
Am I fucked up or is it something
else? Or? Did I take something weird? No, this is going on right now. Well, hey, it's not as bad as me and her going to the wrong funeral though, right? For all your listeners who heard me on the other show.
Great. There we go. Yeah. Oh, and this is a little off subject, I guess. I decided to get a new vehicle. I'm gonna upgrade.
God, it's about time, Steve.
It's about time, Jesus. Yeah. I've had four vehicles in my life. One was a 1967 Volkswagen Bug. The next one was a 1966 Chevy El Camino, and then I got a 2001 Honda Civic, which was I bought it new at the time, you know. So
can you just leave the El Camino out of the conversation next time?
And I have a 1990 Toyota pickup. So I've never actually owned a vehicle where like you have one of those key fobs where you can just push a button and the doors automatically unlock for you, or any type of electric anything in there. You know, I've never had electric windows where you just push a button and the window goes down. They've all been cranks, you know.
Yeah, Steve, you're hurting my ears right now, but go ahead.
Yes, yeah.
You take pride in this for some time as well, which
I kind of have
a little more, which hurts a little bit more.
I think I'm like emotionally attached to these two cars that I have right now or something.
It's severe.
Yeah, it's bad. It, you know, there's been in the last 20 years that I've had this Honda Civic, you know, there's been no less than a dozen times where there's the cute girl that pulls up to the stoplight to your right. And you have to reach over and unroll the window so that you can talk to her.
That is not the DAV. That's
no.
Not a DAV. That's
no.
Not a DAV.
The DAV, a date appropriate vehicle. No, it is not.
You need a DAV. It's not that you can't afford one, Steve, that you just don't want to buy one.
Yes.
We're not talking to go out and get a Lambo, just, you know, Applebee's.
Yes.
Applebee's appropriate vehicle. Oh, man.
It's so true.
But it's in the works, right?
It is in the works, yeah. I got to sell the pickup first, so I've been taking it to work and waxing it on my downtime. It's probably a waste of time. I'm hoping to get $2,000 for the thing, and I figure maybe if I put a couple hours in a waxing it, maybe I'll get $2,200.
You know, somebody will just, you know, they just take those away for you now. You get a tax deduction on that.
Cars for kids.
Like, you know, this is not a level you want to be on, Steve. Waxing your 1990 Toyota truck. I'm just putting it out there.
Just dents all over it. This is
you hurt me when you talk about it.
Oh, yes.
Are you leaning towards anything?
Yeah, I think I'm going to end up getting like a 2015 around there, so like Toyota Tacoma kind of thing. And I found out from our buddy Joe that you can upgrade the electronics in there. So essentially, you can get like what's called an Apple Play. And it essentially, like when you get in the car, it recognizes that you're in the car and it syncs with your phone. And now you basically have an iPad in your truck that mirrors your phone, and you can do GPS and answer phone calls with the push of a button on the steering wheel without ever having to touch anything, you know, like it's technology's come a long way. Yeah.
That's like 2011 or 12.
Technology. I know.
Just want to point that out.
It's time.
Yeah. You might want to think about not getting a stick shift. Just putting it out there.
I will be getting an automatic, that's for sure. Yes. No more stick shifts.
Oh, I think we're going to have a party when you do all this. Jesus.
Out of the four cars that I've owned, three of them have been stick shifts, and I'm just so over it.
That's how, you know, they could solve the driving problem in LA. Just make everybody have to drive stick shifts. Then there would be like less cars on the road because nobody knows how to drive them.
Well, I really need to go to work, but I don't feel like driving a stick shift, so
I'll
stay at home.
Oh, man. Yeah, instead of widening the freeway, like 12 car lanes, you know, filling those things up. Jesus.
Yeah.
with that project they did on the 405 freeway that everybody complains about. You know, they opened it up like 10 lanes. Now there's like 10 lanes of traffic.
Yeah. It's just now a 10 lane parking lot instead of six.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's like, yeah, exactly. It's like 10 lanes of traffic instead of six. I don't know. A bit more lanes, more cars, more people. Doesn't really solve the problem. So, awesome. Yeah.
But, should we bring in Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, let's get Rob on.
Rob Barr, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, good to be here.
Yes. So, Dan Garcia, meet Rob Barr. Rob Barr.
Yeah. Garcia. Rob, good to meet you. Absolutely.
Good to meet you, Dan. I feel like I'm at a bit of an advantage. I actually was able to listen to the last podcast that you were on. So I know a little bit. That story about your dad and the funeral, I don't know that I've laughed harder. if people haven't heard the last one and they hear that I'm laughing about your dad's funeral, it's going to sound horrible. But,
oh, no. You got to listen to the grandmother's funeral.
Oh, yeah.
It's even better. We just finished it.
Wow.
It's a topper. It's a topper. It was great having you on. We went through your bio and everything, and it was great. I was just really excited to have you on and just get some, you know, bits of information and share it with everybody. Yeah, it was great. So welcome.
Very good. Absolutely.
Rob, Danny, I do stocks with. We talk on the phone probably every day about different stocks and stuff like that. So this goes right up your alley. But could you give us just like a little history on yourself? You were born in America. Now you live down in Roatan, Honduras. And do you kind of split your time between the two? Like, just give us a little quick.
Not much. First 36 years were in Michigan, and then actually we lived 22 miles from my grandma, and that was the furthest of the eight grandkids she had. Like, nobody in my family ever went anywhere.
So
we had this really, really big house, thinking we'd probably fill it with kids, and didn't want to move. And then we got transferred to Minneapolis for my work, supposed to be for 4 months, and ended up being 4 years. But that, like, three things happened kind of all at once. One, we went out there. Two, a client that was watching our dogs when we first went out there to look for a place said, if you guys are going to be gone for 4 months, you should really check out VRBO. This was 2014. I'd never heard of it. Didn't know what Airbnb was, but that kind of started the ball rolling. And then we watched the Caribbean Life show, as cliche as that is. And I went, babe, we could do that.
Yeah.
And she went, let's do that. And came back from the office, and I said, 34 months. Here are the spreadsheets. And that's what happened. So we didn't know where we were moving, but we knew it was going to be the Caribbean. The date never changed. So we're down here now, and in the typical non-pandemic kind of year, we spend a week in Michigan for Christmas, like a week in March, and then 2-3 week trips with 1 week in Minneapolis and 2 weeks in Michigan in like June and September. But we're here the rest of the time.
It's like so you're there almost all year.
Yeah, pretty much. Just taking care of my existing clients that do want to meet face-to-face, and that's probably going to be less necessary now that everybody's used to Zoom and the tele stuff. But yeah, just, you know, catching up with friends and family. And I don't need to spend any more time in the snow than I already have in my life.
Yeah.
You did your time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've been to Roatan. I went to Honduras a few years ago, and I went to, where was it? Utila, Roatan, and Granaja.
Really?
Yeah, he liked it.
All three of the main three islands.
Yeah. Now, which one's the closest one? I can't remember. Is it Roatan or Utila?
No, Utila's closer than Roatan.
Utila's closer than Roatan. Yeah, and then Roatan's a little bit more. Like, once you get up into the, I guess that would be like the northern tip, it's pretty sparse. Where are you on the island?
It's actually set in the east. It pretty much runs east and west.
Okay, so on the east end, it's a little sparse, right?
East end's very sparse. A lot of boat access only kind of stuff. And west end actually isn't as far west as West Bay, but West End is more of a fun party type scene. Hostels, a lot of dive shops. West Bay is a little bit more uppity, I guess. I don't know, for lack of a better term. It's just where the expats go that want to live there rather than just go vacation and party.
Party, right. Yeah,
you were here diving or?
It's just vacation. My buddy, and I go on, well, before COVID, for like 12 or 13 years running, we do a 1.5 or 2 month vacation a year and just pick a couple of countries and go. And
spectacular.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you've been on that program a while.
Yeah. We did one in Honduras. And, you know, I remember thinking, you know, I'm looking for a place. I'm going to be retired at 50 years old in 9 years. And I remember thinking I have to come back to Honduras and I really want to see Roatan more. And I'm curious what Guanaja is going to look like, you know, in another decade. Like, is that going to be a little bit more of a place to be, or
it could be. Yeah. Utila may be a little more like Roatan, a little more built up, and Roatan could be too built up by then, be more like, a St. Thomas or a one of the main things I liked to, is the cost of living is just ridiculously low.
Yeah.
You have people think that, oh, you live in the Caribbean, you must've traveled all over, and it's embarrassing. It's pathetic. I've been to like Cabo once, Grand Cayman once, and that's about it. Canada doesn't count because I'm from Michigan. So we want to travel. If we're allowed to, we have Maldives and Thailand and South Africa. Let's see what else. Mauritania. I'm missing one. And Alaska all next year if we can get there. But
okay.
Oh, wow. Oh, that'll be great.
I don't know a lot yet.
That's what we call first world problems.
Yeah, first world problems. Yeah. I don't know what color car I want to get.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Alaska,
life is hard for me.
Africa. I don't know. There's so many places. I just can't decide.
I think I finally hit it when we were back in the States this last time. I told my aunt and uncle, I said, yeah, I said, I live in the Caribbean and my wife lives in Honduras. We just share a condo. And that's what it's like on this island. Where I hang out, you know, we go diving and fishing and it could be a postcard. Yeah. And my wife started the dog sanctuary. She's got 150 dogs and 70 some cats, 14 horses, employs like 20 people way on the east side of the island.
Wow.
And it could be a adopt a child video. It's
wow. So that's cool.
Same island.
Yeah. That's cool.
That's very cool. Wow. Yeah. That's a lot of maintenance. That's a lot of animals. I can barely handle my 18-year-old dog.
18-year-old dog. Wow, you handle him well if he's 18. Good for you.
Well, I think it's a vampire, but it's a vampire. Yeah. On the vamp dog.
It looks like a vampire.
Yeah. Right? Steve has seen it. I can attest to it. I didn't believe it. I had to call the veterinarian hospital and get the birth record.
Yeah, I want proof. Where's his driver's license, right?
Yeah. It still acts like it's six and runs around with toys and wants to go for walks. I'm like, something's wrong.
It's supposed to be nap time by now. You're supposed to just hang out and keep the couch down all day.
No, I wake up and it's staring at me.
Vampire like
for you.
Yeah. Rob, you I know you're quite a poker player. You signed up with me on Poker Bros and just a wizard at Open Face Chinese. And you play a lot of different games, right? Didn't you play in, I was talking to our mutual friend, Dave, and he was saying that you used to play in college quite a bit. You paid your way through school with cards or?
Yeah, I did. I think I'm a year older than you. That was back in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. And
okay.
No Limit didn't really exist in normal casinos, but I did pay for the majority of college with Limit Hold'em. But, you know, then they... Some famous athlete said at some point in time, the game will pass you by. And that definitely happened. You know, when it came on TV and, you know,
got popular.
All the books and I don't have any delusions of grandeur anymore that there's a whole lot of people that are a whole lot better than I am. I enjoy it. I can hold my own at No Limit and I like the other games really more. I love Omaha and Open Face and all that stuff. I don't know that I am as good at Omaha as I'd like to think I am. That I really enjoy it more, but I don't. The hourly rate isn't there, so I guess I'm not as good. But that Open Face was I'd never seen it, and I enjoy learning things and learning strategies.
Oh, you'd never seen it before then?
Nope. That was
wow.
When you popped in the room, that was opening week for me.
Wow. Okay. Well, you figured it out fast. I think you and I played heads up one night and I'm like, well, I just lost $200. I'm not playing him again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you did get most of it back later, but
that was funny. The Joker's one was interesting, you know, because I think the vast majority of people just made the mistake of not going for aces up top.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That, trips isn't worth it because the you just don't hit it enough. But mm-hmm. having that two extra cards from Queens is there were times where you'd have 10, 12 in a row where yeah. it just keep going and going.
My record, I believe, was 10.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was just like, this is insane. Like you're,
it's
you're
a blast.
Yeah, you have such an edge when you have 16 cards and you can see them all. You know?
Yeah, I missed that. That was a fun game.
That was. Now, I also want to talk about you're you mentioned that you were an accredited investor. And for anyone that, well, there's probably 95 out of 100 people or 95% of the listeners don't know what that is. That means that to become an accredited investor, you got to get approved by the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and you got to have for the last couple of years, you have to have at least 200K income every year and look like you're going to make the, you know, 200K in the year that you apply for it. Or if you're married, it's 300K for the last 2 years and this year, or you got to have a net worth of over $1 million. And the kicker to that is you can't count your primary residence, even if it's all paid off and is worth over a mil. That doesn't factor into the equation.
Is it net worth or is it investable assets?
I thought it was net worth.
Okay.
And I think the other one is...
Or I think $5 million in a trust or something?
Yeah, it's like $5 million in assets in your business or something.
I'm not there.
So that really impressed me that you were able to check those boxes because, you know, I think Danny could if they allowed the primary residence.
No, I got knocked out. No.
Oh, you got knocked out by that.
I got knocked out. I'm not bad.
I'm not at a mill yet, so I can't even apply. That really turned me on to you right there. I was like, well, that's impressive. Like, how did you do it? Did you do it through your rentals?
I do there. I haven't had those that long.
Okay.
The income is where I've been able to make it. I've been fortunate on that side of the coin. I've built up a pretty decent financial planning business for specific types of clients that has been quite rewarding. But
this is your day
job. Rental side is way more fun now. What's that?
Okay. Yeah. Which you want to go down the vacation rental, Dan?
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. How'd you get started into that? Danny's got a rental. I've got a couple of them out in Vegas, but it sounds like you're on the next level, and that's.
I heard that. No, our mutual friend Dave suggested that I go ahead and buy one of yours, and he would keep an eye on it and make sure it was secure and such. Very generous guy.
Yes.
No, it was a happy accident. Never really planned on going down that track, and. Just as simple as it can be, my client said, hey, you should look at VRBO. I didn't know what it was. I looked at it. At this point, this is 2014 in the fall, I still didn't know what Airbnb was.
Okay.
And we had expected to be in Minneapolis for like January, February, March, and April of 2015. So I put the house on, took some just pictures myself, basic copyright stuff, tried to fill in all the blanks that they had there. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know what? When we come back, I'll just leave it on at a stupid high price. And if someone wants to pay that in the summer, we'll go on vacation.
Yeah.
And to me at that time, stupid high was like $450 is what I had for a night at that time.
Wow.
And what happened was I didn't get a lot of bookings for January, February, March, April, but it was full in the summer.
Hmm.
And the Minneapolis office is going well. So the founder of the company, approached me and keep in mind, they're paying for my office out there. They're paying for our utilities, our apartment, everything. And just said, hey, do you want to keep it going out there? I went,
yeah,
I can do that. But everything I'm taking in is all just profit because I was going to be paying for that house anyway. So again, no strategy, no skill, just all luck. But what was confusing to me was this wasn't in Orlando. This wasn't in Las Vegas. This wasn't in New York. This wasn't in Charlotte. This was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Who wants to go there?
Exactly.
Right. But that was the beauty of it. Our places, and now we have five, we have five now, they all sleep at least 16. They all have at least five bedrooms. They all have a pool. They all have a hot tub. So they're large luxury.
Yeah.
And we are most of the market because who else wants to buy a house that you're not going to live in and furnish it and keep it up? If you're not going to at least go vacation there quite a bit. So we have, there's a fair amount of people coming in town for weddings or kids sports is big now, but 65-70% are grandma and grandpa with their 2, 3, 4 kids and their spouses and 6, 8, 10, 12 grandkids.
Okay.
And now I look at when I was doing 450 a night and I go, wow, did I leave a lot on the table?
okay.
What a joke. And COVID, it is what it is. It wasn't obviously something that we tried to profit off of, but hotels all had to be closed. People that were going to go to Sydney, people that were going to go to Greece, people that were going to go to Honolulu, come to Grand Rapids, Michigan, because they want to go somewhere.
Yeah.
As soon as they could go anywhere, they wanted to go somewhere. So they're coming from Chicago and Detroit so they can drive it. They don't have to fly.
Yeah.
We're pet friendly. We have fast Wi-Fi mesh systems so they can work if they want to. Yeah. And the kids have a pool.
Okay.
And, you know, we're 4 figures a night on every house all summer long.
Wow.
That's our market.
That's awesome.
That's perfect. Awesome. That's a great little niche.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. It really, really has. Because at that price point, you can do things, you know, people show up, you guys show up to the place and you're going to walk into a couple bottles of wine. You're going to walk into all the stuff for s'mores because we got a fire pit there, handwritten notes. If you need something, you know, I have people that are right there and it's nice to be able to provide that. And we can at that price point. So I don't have to, you know, nickel and dime things and try to cut corners here and there. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that makes things a lot more fun when you can provide that level of service, you know, to people.
Absolutely.
You know? Absolutely. You know, and it's great. And just being like, because I just came back from an Airbnb, you know, and it's so nice to have a great host, you know. It's like I had the lady next door who was in communication with, you know, the owner, like whatever I needed, I would just ask the person next door, you know, like it was great.
Absolutely.
You know, the house cleaner was one floor down, you know, if I needed something, you know, it was cool. It's great, you know. So, just I'm a big advocate of that, you know, just providing that level of service, just being like the customer on the receiving end. It's just really nice to have that, because a lot of times I don't want to stay in a hotel, you know. A lot of times it's kind of nice to go to the store and, you know, have some stuff, cook a little meal. I don't want to
have a kitchen where you can cook and
you can eat healthier. You can
absolutely,
you can save a lot of money too, you know, versus having to go out every meal.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just the cleaning, you know, because it's kind of the only thing about the hotel. It's kind of nice to have the clean sheets every day. But, you know, you get a housekeeper come in, you know, have, you know, offering the service of being able to come in, you know, maybe once every, you know, 1, 2, 3 days or something, you know, offering that, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, I mean, I dig that when people have a little bottle of wine or just some s'more, whatever it is, chocolate, you know. Yeah, it's just nice, you know. So
it's fun to see. We ask if they're willing to send us pictures that we can use for marketing and stuff, and we usually have a little contest each year where we give away a free weekend night or something. And seeing, yeah, there's a yoga retreat. There's like 18 women in doing yoga in one of the living rooms of one of our houses.
That one.
Yeah, right.
You can say 2 weeks. It's cool.
It wasn't that naked yoga stuff that you hear about. It
wasn't hot, naked, steamy yoga.
But seeing how much fun they're having, and you know, when you have bigger families like that, it's less important where it is, as long as it's somewhat convenient for everybody to get to. But you know, if you say, hey, we're all going to go over here, and they're going to get 5, 6 hotel rooms. The grandparents are never going to see the grandkids. People go to bed at different times. And so the hotel model is great for what it's meant for, but it's not an end all be all for everybody. That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, I was in, you know, I was surprised because, you know, I stayed, Steve, when I was, just came back from Colombia, and you know, it's COVID. There's no tourists. I'm in Bucaramanga and all the Airbnbs are like full. Like, and I'm saying like, and there was no tourists. This is just local Colombia people in a nice city. And I was so surprised that I actually had to move over a 3-week period. I could only stay because I didn't know if I was going to be able to be there for a long period of time. So I only booked for like 1 week. I didn't want to book 2 weeks, but yeah. Everything was booked. And I was kind of
dumbfounded. Scrambling to find a place. Sure.
Yeah. It happened to me 2 times. I'm like, oh no, there's no tourists here. Nobody's here. I'm like, nope. She's there. No, it's booked. I was like, wow. You know, it's a thing.
It is.
Yeah. Now you started. So the first one that you got was your primary residence, right? And then that's when you found out about vacation rental.
There was a market, really.
You said there was or was not?
I found that there was a market at that point.
There was a market. Yeah. So you did it with your first residence.
Yeah. I never would have considered buying a house to do that with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just.
But when you moved anyways, you're like, well, we got to get something for this place. So. You did it and it worked. And then
at that point, we were coming back every month or two for a week or two. So I didn't want to rent our place long term because we wouldn't be able to use it.
Okay,
Really fit the what we were trying to do well too. I just block it off when we were coming back.
Now, what did you do as far as for the second one that you got? What kind of loan did you get for that one?
So what we did, first one was obviously primary residence for me. Second one, I talked to my brother. He travels. He's probably out of the state more than I am now yet. He's all over for work. So he just crashed at my parents' place when he was around. He's 10 years younger than me. He bought that one as his primary residence.
Okay. So that's when you got the loan as a primary residence rate.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yep. And you and do then, 10%, 20% down?
We do 20 down. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then you avoid the PMI. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then what we were able to do is we do quite a bit of improvement. And our house, we bought it at the right time. Again, got lucky. So it was worth quite a bit more than what we had paid for. So we got a HELOC.
Okay.
And then the next house I bought was my new primary residence. Yep. I was renting the other one as a long-term.
Okay.
So unfortunately, if you just say, hey, yep, we're doing this as a short-term rental, look at my books, which are beautiful.
Yeah.
They won't touch it. Because it's not you don't have a long-term lease signed. So we had to get somebody that signed a long-term lease saying they were going to go there. And then as it turned out, they broke the lease later and ended up not showing up. Hopefully the loan officers or ever aren't listening to the podcast, but.
Did you get your buddy to do that? Or was this a fictional, person or did you?
No, it was a real person.
Oh, okay.
A friend of ours.
Okay, nice.
Well, double bunny air quotes, very close friend.
Exactly right. Yes, yes.
I have not heard of that strategy. That is brilliant. Because it is when you're negotiating these things, if it's a primary residence, they're going to give you, we'll just say 3%. If it's a second home, you're going to get 3.5%. If it's a rental, because you're going to get 4%, right?
Yeah. Well, they figure if something goes wrong, you're going to give up your secondary first before your residence.
So exactly.
There's a risk premium, and that's reasonable.
Exactly. Yeah.
A negotiation between you and the loan officer, and then once the loan is signed and it's done, that's it, right?
That's it. That's it.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's no like legal repercussions or any of that shit. You just have to convince them that, this is my primary residence. And
I did that. Yeah.
I've played the same game too.
You apply for it. Yep.
I've played the same game too. I just never even thought of the, writing up a lease agreement. That's pretty brilliant.
Well, I know. And that came from the loan officer. Truthfully, a friend of mine, he's like, oh, well, if it was this, he didn't tell me to do it.
Yeah, they want to push it through. They want to push it through the underwriting, they want to get paid. They want to get paid too,
And he understands, the real true annual rent for every house we have after cleaning fees is six figures each one.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I'm showing $3,000 a month on this long-term lease.
Yeah.
And I think they take 80% of it or something like that and count it. And they're good with that, but they won't take the real number.
Wow. That's just ridiculous. They force you into doing this. You know what I mean?
Now, I've been studying and trying to learn more nuances. And there's a guy, I get no kickback, no credit, but I've learned a lot from him. So I'll give him a quick plug. Short-term rental university. His name's Richard Furtag. He actually ran a hedge fund. He's an MBA from Wharton. Brilliant guy.
Nice.
He's doing a lot with this kind of stuff and has, I think, 20,000 people, following and working with him and stuff. And he also suggested that was doing the mortgage that way.
Yeah. See, this is why I do this show, Rob. There's little golden nuggets that just pop up that you never even know.
Absolutely. So it's a little easier there. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rob. Oh, no, no, no. Please go ahead.
I don't remember what company it was, but he had somebody on a webinar at one point, and I've talked to him a couple times pre-pandemic, where they were a bank or a lending institution of some sort, and they were using short-term rental income. They that was their niche. They were actually trying to go after people like me, people that, hey, we have collateral, we have income, but we also have a lot of houses, and here's where it is. And you're talking about 80 to 110 basis points higher than a normal mortgage.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. That's
easy to be approved.
Yeah.
So that seemed fairly attractive to me, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so, what'd you do on the fourth one? That was the third one.
Fourth was my brother's new primary resident.
Okay.
primary three.
Yep. It actually got funnier because we had to sell the second one because the township banned it.
Oh.
So then he bought two within a year and 3-4 months that were both his primary residence, one than the other, the same way we had done it before because they had to sell that one.
Now, is it the same area?
There's three within 20 miles. And then the most recent one we bought, by far the biggest, that one's about an hour away.
Okay.
And the other one's about 40 minutes away.
Okay. And when are the loans under his name?
Two are him, two are me. And then the fifth one, it's actually just a buddy of mine that I've known forever, and he didn't have a house. He just rented a room from somebody. Again, he worked all the time, didn't really care. So what we ended up doing was finding a place that had a huge pole barn. So that was great for us for storage, because when you have furnished houses, I bought a dozen queen size beds one day when they were on sale. Yeah. Like you go through stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
so Tuck the Needle loves you. Casper loves you. Purple. Yeah.
Talking stock, Casper got hit because they didn't have enough inventory. Purple's the one that exploded. But,
Purple's the new Casper.
It is. That same pole barn had an apartment in it. So he actually lives on site in this apartment.
Okay. He's loving it.
It's perfect because he's right there if anything happens. And so he owns the fifth.
He has a property built-in property manager.
Yep.
I love it. That's awesome.
That's great. That's great.
Would you recommend, I always find, because we're on the West Coast, you know, and it's like, God, real estate, things are just like, you know, the prices out here are a little different.
Yeah, I can't make the numbers work there. I've had a couple people talk about
you know
California.
What? This is, I've been explaining this to Steve for so long. I'm like, look, Steve, I got a couple places here, but it's so hard to do. You're absolutely right. You can't make the numbers work here on the West Coast in like California. Recommendations for listeners, you know, maybe some other areas, maybe you found attractive, or maybe the area that you started, you know, if someone wanted to, you know, possibly, you know, get into doing that type of thing.
Sure, Dave. I just had a client, a financial planning client that's pulling the trigger in Arizona. Though the price point there looked fine. I think they'll do okay. There was a show. I'm sure it was sponsored by VRBO or HomeAway of some sort that basically went through people, you know, looking at three or four and then buying one, and it showed the numbers and they were horrendous overall. I was not impressed, except Myrtle Beach is where I would buy right now if I was going to look for somewhere else. But I would encourage people to not necessarily look where everybody else wants to go. Mm-hmm. I thought when we moved here to Roatan that I would build some places, develop some stuff, and the numbers are atrocious. What happens is people come down here, they see it, they love it, they say, you know what we ought to do? We should just buy a place, then we can come down here, spend a month every year, rent it out the rest of the time, you know, see if we can cover most of our expenses, and then we can retire here in 10 years. So I'd be competing as people that are trying to cover most of their expenses. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah,
right, very different goals. So the market's saturated and the price point's lower. You take my same houses and put them in Orlando, put them in San Francisco. Even in San Francisco, where the houses I have would be multi millions of dollars with how expensive everything is, you still wouldn't get the rent that I get. because there's so much more competition.
No, it's just very good. Yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, that's like the Bucaramanga thing. Like everything's like booked. And I'm sitting here going, nobody even knows where I am.
No one's even heard of this place.
Nobody's even heard of this place. And all the beer B&Bs are booked. And these places are going for like, I don't know, they're like 70, 80K. I'm like, there might be something here.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, I've talked to a lot of different people and, you know, college towns, they're trying to do, and I do not advocate for this, but a lot of the bigger players are doing arbitrage where they aren't even buying them. They're signing multiple year leases with landlords and then subletting them as Airbnbs.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
That's risky.
Yeah. You get in a whole lot of, you know, that's a lot of cobwebs.
It is.
Yeah. That's
my rules are, I will not be in a condo association or a homeowners association. And originally our rule was, we wouldn't obviously go a place where it was outlawed. Now I've amended that to, we won't go anywhere where it's not specifically allowed with some kind of permit. If they do that, they're collecting tax revenue. No chance they're going to change their mind later and decide, oh, we don't need this revenue.
Like what happened with your...
What happened with my other one in Ada.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Right.
Neighbors, I like the no HOA rule. That's pretty good because both of my places in Vegas have an HOA and it never goes down. Every year they kick it up a little bit, you know, and it never goes away.
It's like rent. Rent doesn't go down hardly, you know.
And if it's a vacation area, people are used to it. If it's on a lake, people are used to it. But where I'm at, my neighbor's not used to having 16 different people there every weekend. Yeah. We have to be really, really good neighbors and make sure we're
lots of cookies.
Two places where it's private street and we just cover the cost of plowing for the whole street. And, you know, we've done dinners and stuff for people just to try to be nice. I make sure I tell them what we're doing and they have my cell phone number. So if there's any kind of issue, they can let me know and not the police. But we don't really get a whole lot of parties because of the price point. If you're college kids and you want to go throw a rager, you're going to go to a cheap place. It's cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What I've found for us is that fifth bedroom, it makes a lot of difference.
Okay. Nice. That's what allows the grandkids to come.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And Rob, how do you like houses? You like more houses and you're kind of more against kind of doing like condos because of the association, of course, right?
I like to make money four ways on this. One, obviously just what we pay versus what we collect, just the cash flow difference. Secondly, we get the appreciation of the house. You don't get that with a condo, at least not nearly as fast.
Right,
Where I live, where in Michigan, where we did live, condos go up at a quarter of the rate of homes. So that's what's missing from there.
Right, good, yep.
The third way is the mortgage is being paid down, so you're building equity that way. And then the fourth way is the taxes are very, very forgiving and lucrative when you're in this industry as well.
It's better in the Airbnb type world than it is for just a steady renter.
Absolutely. Because we run the management company side of it. So some of the stuff you still have to amortize over, 28 and a half years or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But a whole lot of it can be done that year.
Huh.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that's some really good information. I think a lot of people get a lot out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you find the rules of, you know, whether this place is collecting taxes for vacation rentals like this as opposed to, you know,
call the township and ask the question. I call myself the townships and I write down who I talk to, what they say, and then I get any kind of ordinance they have in writing. It's just too expensive. It costs a lot to set one up. It costs a whole lot to set one up. It's not like a normal rental. You know, you buy a house and you want to rent it out, you go in there and make sure it's safe, make sure the appliances are good, the HVAC stuff's fine. Maybe give it a cone of paint and check the flooring, right? Well, here, I'm putting in silverware and plates and big screen TVs and mesh Wi-Fi systems and every pot and pan you could possibly think of and all the beds and all the art and all the mirrors and everything.
You're like half decorator.
And that costs a lot. And typically the first year when you don't have reviews, it's about half. Sometimes 60% of what you'll be getting revenue in the following years.
Because you don't have the base.
You need to build up the reviews.
You need to build the
customers. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. It's a business.
We're very cyclical. You know? It is. Yeah, it takes time. Yeah. We're very cyclical. The 8 center weeks of summer, the starting the 3rd week of June and ending the after the 2nd week of August.
Yeah.
I could rent 40 of them. But
wow.
If I have 10 nights total amongst all 5 houses in February, that's surprising.
Oh, so okay. Okay. So that's when you make your money is in the summer.
Absolutely. But we have to somehow buy them and get them ready for the summer, but we can't buy one during the summer because we're busy with the other ones. And then in the fall, we're trying to catch up with the deferred maintenance from the summer. So we typically buy in December or January. So we have a limited amount of time for it to be online. One of our houses is half full next summer already. Wow. Well, obviously, you don't have that with a new one.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Right on.
Now, so you're in buying season right now, Rob.
Yeah. The first year I'm not going to. I can't pull the trigger. Everything's overpriced.
It is. How do you feel about the because obviously, you know, the housing market, as you know, it's a cyclical market. How do you feel where the state? Do you think like things are a little bit on a sugar high right now with the interest rates being so low and everything? What's your take on that?
Yeah. Inventory is super low. Interest rates are low.
Yeah.
And what I think I want to do next is buy a double lot, build 2 houses with a single center driveway and have it split. So we're our own neighbor. But building costs are worse right now than buying costs. God, building costs are through the roof too.
Yeah, they're just crazy. The numbers don't work. I live in Santa Barbara, and it's like I tell people, don't buy here unless it's your forever home and you don't plan on making any money.
Well, you guys might. Are people leaving there as well, like San Francisco and some of the other
places? No, okay. No. See, it's only San Francisco, LA, which is, you know, well, we can get into that political stuff. That's a whole nother show. But yeah, that's like 90,000 people, 89,000 to be, you know, have left San Francisco, as I was actually reading the other day. And then U-Haul is paying people to drive trucks back to California because there's so many people leaving the big cities.
They're all one-waying it to Colorado and Texas,
Boise, Arizona. That's
so have you seen prices there drop then?
Not where, well, it's protected where I'm. It's more like, you know, this is more like a Laguna Beach, you know, like Malibu-ish kind of thing. So, you know, money, it's old money. People are always here. But as soon as you go to LA, you know, it's a completely different story. You know, that's a different, whole different market. You know, people are just leaving those areas and either they're going east, you know, inland, or they're just leaving the entire, you know, state, you know, like San Francisco. You know, even where Steve is at, which is not far away, Ventura County. Actually, a lot of people moving into your area, Steve, from LA, because it's cheaper and it's actually one of the last places in California by the beach, right?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people are moving around and out. And so there is definitely kind of a mass exodus, but it's more in the bigger cities for sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even if there is a slight correction there in pricing, then it was so overpriced before that it would bring it down to still somewhat overpriced, most likely.
You know what? You're absolutely right about that. It's still going to be a higher. I mean, even if it comes down here, it's not going to be like crazy. Like I would say the last time when things crashed, you know, the bigger, everything came down maybe like 50%, somewhere like Santa Barbara, Ventura County, these areas, beach area communities came down about like 30-35%. So there's a little bit of a difference there as well.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your thought on, at least Danny and I are thinking like once the forbearance ends and, you know, like right now with COVID, if my renters and hopefully they're not listening to the show, if they wanted to just stop paying rent, they could legally do that. And there's no legal ramification any legal foot that I have to stand on to collect anything from them or even kick them out. I'm thinking that there's got to be some landlords that are in a spot like that where their renters know the laws and they're just not paying.
That's happening.
I'm hoping that creates a little bit more supply and drives the price down when that happens. Are you kind of on the same wavelength, Rob, or have you?
It could be. The people that I know that are in that situation, it just cycles. So they call their banks and say, I'm not getting rent. I need forbearance. And they get forbearance on the mortgage.
Yeah. But that ends.
So they're both just kicking the can down the road.
Exactly. And okay. That all ends January 31st. Forbearance is done after that, unless the government steps in and implements another CARES Act, which doesn't look too likely.
No. They're far apart on that at this point. It is tough to say. I know a lot of people that liked it as a passive income stream, that just maybe had a house and moved, and but I will keep this one and rent it out also, or mom or dad died and rather than selling their house, we'll just keep it as a rental. That'll provide some nice income. Got scared or aren't getting rent or just got, it's no longer, hey, this is probably going to be an easy cash flow for everything. And I think they want out.
Okay.
In my industry, a lot of people that were in the short term got scared and took long-term contracts so that they would have a more likely income, even though it wouldn't be as high.
Yeah. Okay. Right on. Interesting. I want to talk a little bit about your day job, you're a financial advisor. You do a lot of, retirement planning. You mentioned that, setting up, college accounts for kids. Could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah. I don't like the accumulation planning side of things. I've been there. I have fun with it myself, at a way higher risk tolerance than I'd probably ever, offer to a client. I do more of the preservation and distribution planning. So I work with families that have kids starting college in a year or two.
Okay.
Not working with kids that need 529s because they're 2 years old.
Okay.
West Michigan's just a weird place. Yeah.
I just had a kid, Rob. Help me.
Yeah, jump it down.
He starts college in 18 years. What do I do?
You should have started saving 7 years ago. You know how expensive college is?
Yes, sir.
Your kid's already born. You're late.
Yeah, you're going to have to send him to Thailand for school.
But no, when we help them figure out, navigate the financial aid system. And I in Michigan specifically, where I'm in the conservative West Side, it's very common to find people that have a $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year income, but have 200 grand in CDs.
Huh,
and,
wow.
A couple kids in school with that income, they're Pell Grant eligible, except that asset counts against them at 5.6% every year.
Yeah.
So we find shelters for those types of things, and obviously all legal, ethical stuff.
Yeah.
And then the retirement side, I do more income planning, and I'm not a fan of annuities. I don't like how they're typically sold, how they're typically advertised.
Okay, what's an annuity? Give our listeners a quick definition of that.
So annuity 101, let's say there's four types. A fixed annuity is almost the same thing as a CD. Money's on deposit, gets a fixed rate, not a very good rate right now, but you know what you're going to get. A variable annuity is a lot like a mutual fund. Typically, the fees are substantially higher. They grow tax deferred instead of taxable every year, but they are taxed as ordinary income when they come out. A single premium immediate annuity is like a pension. So you give $100,000 to this company at age 60 and you get $500 a month for life.
Distribution, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then a fixed index annuity is kind of a hybrid, but really I think it was the Johnson administration just wanted definitive lines so you knew who you were working with. So right now, if you put money in a money market, you just made an investment with a brokerage firm. And if you put money in a CD, you made a deposit at a bank. If you put money in a fixed annuity, you put it in a premium with an insurance company. But they're pretty darn similar, right?
Okay.
The lines have been blurred somewhat, but that's kind of the basics of it. So I don't like variable annuities. They're just too expensive. I don't even like regular mutual funds. I think index funds are far better.
Steve, I've been telling you that this whole time.
Now, what's the difference between an index fund and a mutual fund? Like an index fund would be the S&P 500?
Yeah, unmanaged. So the average cost now on a managed mutual fund is just north of 1%, I believe.
Okay.
Whereas, you can go to TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or pick a discount online broker,
Vanguard,
preferably. And, 0.04, 0.05.
Yeah.
Big difference. And the interesting part, this stat's probably 3 or 4 years old, and I don't know where the updated number is, but at that time, it was 96% of index funds were outperforming the managed funds that were the closest in asset class.
Okay.
So I'm supposed to go to a client and say, hey, I have an idea. I'd like to charge you 20 times the fee, but I'm going to lose 96% of the time. Is that okay?
Yeah. That's great deal, right? Great deal.
I don't do that. I don't like that.
What are some of the indexes you like a lot? The S&P 500, is that one of them? Or
That's probably the most representative of large company America. Dow only has 30 stocks in it, so it doesn't really, isn't too representative. I think right now, most people are more bullish on like the S&P 400, you know, companies 501 through 900, or like the Russell 2000, where you're dealing with more small and mid-sized companies.
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't heard of this one. The S&P 400?
Yeah, that's considered mid-cap.
Okay. And now you said the S&P 500 only has 30?
No, companies? The Dow has 30. The S&P 500 has 500.
Has 500. Okay, yeah. Okay.
But you see, the Dow's been around, I don't know if it's longer or it's just better known or what, but people talk about the market and they're talking about the Dow, and that's
right.
It's just not a great representation in my opinion. So I would prefer to own, you know, more companies in a single index.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, a lot of what I do is income planning based, and preservation and distribution and estate planning, wealth transfer stuff. When should they turn on Social Security? Should they be pulling from their Roth or their traditional accounts? You know, non-qualified versus qualified. And we look at that more. It's a different market. And so it makes things that I wouldn't normally like sometimes make sense. This is an example I give a lot of my clients. Again, not uncommon at all to see incomes. And even the more successful families, they're making 120, 140.
Yeah.
And they save a fair amount. They're not normal US spend more than we make kind of people. Mm-hmm. So they're getting, you know, close to retirement. And we talk about dialing back how aggressive they're being, and it never feels right. You know, you never want to take your foot off the gas pedal. You always have the fear of missing out then.
Yeah.
But I'll explain to them, look, if you had $10,000 a month after tax to live on retirement, would that work for you? And they'd say, yep, absolutely. So, okay. If it was 20, think about this and answer honestly, would it change your lifestyle a lot? Because it would for me, right?
Yeah.
But for most of them, it wouldn't.
Would,
because they're
right,
still not going to feel right about buying a new Maserati every other year. They're still not going to feel right about, you know, staying in 5-star hotels instead of 4-star hotels. So really, they're taking all this extra risk, and there's not going to be a true benefit if it works.
The reward isn't there, right?
Yeah. Right.
The reward is unneeded almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you know, people just get used to, you know, like how they buy and, you know, what they buy, you know, they buy a new pair of shoes, you know, once a year, you know, like thing, you know? So
and my own parents, you know, we sent them to Ruth Chris for their anniversary, and I ordered a hat because I knew what would happen. If they saw the price on the menu, they wouldn't want to order anything.
They wouldn't order anything, yeah.
This
is
how they are.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, but the macaroni and cheese, oh my God. It's like
five water
cheeses.
With extra ice cubes?
Yeah. We're not paying for those, are we?
Why did they give us
My dad did comment afterwards. He's like, you realize a damn baked potato is $9.
Yeah.
Like, you can get like 4 bags of them for that. And I'm like, yeah, they're better there. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not russet.
Happy anniversary, Dad.
Oh, my God. You have the Himalayan sea salt, you know?
Yep. Yeah, you've been there. You know what you're talking about.
Yep. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Ruth Chris. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Hey, you wrote just kind of off the cuff a little bit, but do you deal with any like emerging market stuff, and do you like it, or, you know, ADRs kind of thing, or does that ever interest you? Or are you in it, any of it or anything like that?
It interests me. I don't do it with my clients, and I'm really not in it much. I just think that there is a lot more potential in places other than the US. But you're dealing with currency risk. You're dealing with reinvestment risk. If it's anything that's you know, debt related, you're dealing with other governments. So
yeah,
I'm not afraid of risk at all, but I just don't feel like I know enough.
For your clients though, you know, you wouldn't mind, you know,
so I would have no problem playing in the game.
Yeah, because we do a lot, and we buy. You know, we're in a lot. We do, I would say, almost like half, Steve.
I like that. It's probably more than a third and less than half, somewhere in that ballpark. Out of, you know, other banks and other countries, you know, random stuff.
Yeah.
I think I bought something this morning that was out of the country. I don't know what it was, but Joy. That's what it is. J-O-Y-Y.
Okay.
It's an American deposit of something international. It got some options on it, but.
What, cool. So you mentioned before, that, when you and I were talking that, you believe that the market is kind of prepped for a downturn, and that you said that, you'd been doing some puts and shorts.
Yeah. Now, so full disclosure, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I'm always right in what the market should do, but the market doesn't always agree with me. So,
yeah.
I thought the market's been overvalued now for a couple of years.
Okay.
I thought the COVID correction in March was kind of where it should have been anyway.
Okay.
And then the rebound shouldn't have happened. So I'm admittedly more of a value investor. You know, I see Zoom at like 130 and go, well, that's double what it was before. I don't want to buy in. It's too high right now, even though it triples over the next 3 months. So I miss out on some of that growth stuff because that's just not really
same,
my style as much.
Yeah.
But I have been buying puts. I've done quite well with some of them. What I did was I bought a whole bunch of puts on stuff that I thought would be affected. And then I bought calls on a bunch of different pharmaceutical companies, figuring if I'm wrong on the puts, because to fix the virus. If there's a
vaccine.
Yeah. If one of these companies comes through with the vaccine, then my puts might not be good, but at least that should hopefully skyrocket. And Pfizer's up, I think 60% or something from where I got that one, but did well on some. And it absolutely freaking blows my mind that AMC movie theaters, they're up like 7% in the last 2 months.
Yeah, I think they're Chinese owned, actually.
I don't know how's that happening. Like they're closing more and more theaters.
Well, it's kind of like Carnival Cruise Line. We actually made get some money on that like 3 or 4 times, and we're like, it keeps going up, Steve.
I'm
like,
but there's all this cruise morning. Ships. What happened?
Yeah, our cruise got canceled. How's it going up? I don't understand it.
No, like, that's been beyond frustrating. With that particular one, they announced that they were going to try to issue new shares
to raise revenue,
and they skyrocketed.
Yes.
But I'm like, wait a minute.
Do the opposite.
How is that a good sign for the company?
Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah, but it's funny you mentioned the cruise lines. We were supposed to be in the Mediterranean yesterday on an 18-day cruise.
Oh, congratulations.
And obviously that canceled, so no, yeah, right?
Well, of course it did. I mean, yeah. I had to put my mankini away.
Right? Well, we all appreciate that. It was probably 3 months ago, and I'm like, you know what I'm going to do? And I shorted American Airlines, and I shorted the cruise line and figured, if we get to go, great. I get to go on this wonderful Mediterranean cruise. If not, I should at least make money on these.
Yeah.
And I did on the American Airlines. I'm a big Michigan football fan, and when I really care about the game, I sometimes will bet on the other team. I still want Michigan to win, but at least if Michigan loses, I get something out of it.
Yeah, you win. Yeah.
That was kind of my thought with the trade there.
Okay.
Well, I got Copa Airlines. So I made out pretty good on that. Paid for my flight.
Really well. Sure. Yep.
Oh man, yeah, we killed that one. I think we got it at $30 a share, and the last I saw today, I think it was at 82 or something.
Yeah.
Spectacular. Yeah. Beautiful.
Do you look at any of the graphs? We use a program called TC2000, and we look at like low stochastic. We look for what we call bounces, you know, like where let's say a stock price will go down to $20 and then it goes up to 25 and then it comes back down to 20. Like at
where you're
that
seeing
point,
that resistance pattern.
Yes. Like RSI, stochastic. Sure. Do you use a bit of that stuff? Mm-hmm. Basically? Yeah.
So it goes against the value side, because what you're typically looking for is the time when it breaks through that upper resistance on the top end of the horizontal side.
Right.
But I'm trying to do that more because it seems like that's where a lot of the more active traders do make more of their money, trying to identify those patterns and getting in when it breaks that resistance. Because I don't know the exact saying, but something like the resistance becomes the new support.
Old support is new resistance.
Exactly.
So
I've been and what I've done, this is not what you should do. The last podcast you guys had the other guy on that was a very knowledgeable, very active trader, and I caught that right away.
Aaron
Aaron said, you know, I don't recommend this, or you guys shouldn't do this, and I'm doing the same thing right here. But I like to gamble, and I like to do it obviously when it's in my favor, which normally keep me away from puts because over time the market does go up.
Yeah.
But we talked about that a little bit with the crowdfunding stuff, the Reg A and C. But there was a company I just started looking at a little more. They're from Detroit actually, but Benzinga is their name. I don't know a lot about them. I watched some little webinar they had, and the guy I think mentioned three specific stocks that, you know, had poised for breakout based on this trend that they were going to be, you know, recommending to their subscribers. And so I just bought call options on all of them, and 90% the first day on one of the three, they were all up, but the one, so next day it was down 25, today it was up like 40 more and I sold it, but it was 120% in 3 days. I don't even know what company it was. I didn't analyze it. I didn't look at it. I looked at what he said and went, yeah, you do this a lot. Cool. I'm just going to throw some dice at it. Whatever. And that's exactly what I did.
Blind squirrel getting the nut.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a whole lot of people that know a whole lot more than I do when it comes to picking stocks. And I don't doubt for a second that, like, he was doing, you know, large option orders with just trying to get a nickel here and there because it adds up. That's great. That's spectacular. But it's really timing sensitive. And I'm not...
Yes.
Not a huge fan of that. I like to be scuba diving and
that's how we are.
Phone while I'm underwater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we stopped kind of doing options for the most part. Cause I'm like, Steve, I just don't like being up that early in the morning.
Right. Yeah.
I like the swing trading. We like the swing trading stuff. Cause it's kind of set it and forget it a little.
Yeah. We pick ones that have dividends too.
Yeah. I saw that your rules were what, under $50 if possible and pay dividends.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Do you do the
now,
same
do you guys
kind of thing,
buy beginning of the day like that? That's something that I hadn't really known a whole lot about. And I've heard it a few times recently where, you know, rookies buy the beginning and pros buy the end, pros buy the close.
You know, and, one thing that's, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
One thing that's nice about buying at the end of the day is you get to see how the bar turns out for that day. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when,
get more information.
You get more information. Yeah. So especially like at the end of a Friday, you can see in the weekly, like, okay, during the week, it came in at $15. It went down to 10 and then it went up to 16 and closed out. It's more likely the next week it's going to be higher than 16 because you have like a reversal bar. It's gone lower than it did the previous week. Maybe you can line that up with some support lines or moving averages or something. So I could see how doing it towards the end of the day would be, you have more information to go on.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But one thing that you can do also, most of the time, like when a stock opens in the morning, it'll just shoot around for the first 30 minutes or an hour or so. And usually where it settles on by the end of the day is about around there. You know, most of the volatility happens like right when it, you know, in that first 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First flurry of trades.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And since we're doing it for such a long term, it's, you know, cause we're getting into these and then getting out like 3 to 6 months later, you know? Mm-hmm. So getting in at the end of Monday, as opposed to like, you know, 9 a.m.
doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. I don't think
it's not really a day. It's not a day trade, right? You know, it's where we're doing things on a, you know, weekly, monthly basis more so. So
now, did you guys set stop loss limits at 7-8% loss from where you started or not?
No.
We used to with when doing the options, but you know, it's we just haven't really had the need to do that. You know,
you just don't lose money. That's the better plan.
If they go down, then at least you're getting a dividend. We've got a couple that we got like last year. I remember one in particular. It was MO. What is MO? It's Altria. Right?
Altria.
Yeah. So I think we got in that one at $55 or $60. Now it's around 40. So dollar wise, I think in that one I'm down like 300, but I've gotten like almost $100 worth of dividends. So in a few years, even if it just continues to do that, I'll make up my initial investment. And you know, that it's like an insurance plan is the way we look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to get something out of it. That's not the old Mar. Yeah, that's Philip Morris. Yeah, they were known for paying dividends. They were at one point they were like 7%.
Yes, yes, they still are. They still are.
Are they really? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. They still are. Well, you know that there's really kind of cool. There's we look from all over the world though. So I mean, we've done I mean, there's what's LYG, Steve. There's Nat. We've done, you know, all these, like, you know, English banks, Scottish banks, like all over the place.
Down in South America.
Yeah, several banks. Yeah, Argentina. But we're not in these for like years. You know, we just get our money and run. get our money. If we're lucky, we collect some dividend and get the hell out, you know? Yeah. So, and if we get stuck, well, it's only a few, you know, a percent or two of the bankroll, and who cares? We'll just collect some dividends, you know? And then those all add up to the end of the year, and we can set up some new positions with those dividends if we want to. So, yeah, I mean, it just, it works.
It, when you do, we talked a little bit before the show about accredited and, being an accredited investor, and you mentioned that so once you get into that class, so that's the one where you 200 plus K a year, $1 million net worth, yada yada yada, once you get approved, what was the process for getting approved by the SEC for that?
It was all done through the site. So
wow.
What happened is I got, I don't remember which one it was, like Morning Brew or 1440 or something, The Hustle. I get like four emails every morning that just kind of give you a rundown of news, sports, finance, whatever. And one of them had an advertisement in it for a product called Flippy, but more specifically a company called Miso Robotics. And I just fell in love with it. And that was on there, and it just filled out your information, and it said, do you want to apply to be an accredited investor? So I clicked the box, and I had to upload, I think, tax returns. it's super, super simple. I did have to upload tax returns, I think, but that was it. Approved and good to go. Now, the interesting thing, that was, I think, Start Engine, not 100% positive. It was Start Engine or Seed Invest. And the other one, I just said yes, and they didn't ask for a thing.
Really?
Wow.
I typed in my income and net worth and clicked the box that, yes, I wanted to be an accredited investor, and there was never a follow-up, and I'm listed as an accredited investor. So that may be an issue at some point if they're not doing their due diligence to actually make sure people are what they claim, but it hasn't – they didn't ask a thing yet.
Yeah, and what were the investment amounts for each one?
What was that?
What were the investment amounts for each one? Was it 10 grand or 35 or?
With a lot of them are pretty low now. There's some 10s, there's some 20s, but I think Flippy was 1,000, 2,000, something like that.
Okay.
There's a fair amount at 10, but a lot of these, it's the guy from Shark Tank, Mr. Wonderful. He's the face behind it. I don't know what percent he owns or how it works, but they're coming in with these crowdfunding things, and some of the minimums are 500, and they're doing like investor perks. I got some $400 Corinthian leather backpack from the Knack company for investing $1,000. I'm like, shit, whatever. It's a nice backpack. If the investment goes away, fine.
That's awesome, man.
I'll take that to the beach. It was free.
Right. Yeah. Cold brew coffee from somebody. Yeah, just they're trying to make it a playground where a lot more people can hang out is what it really seems like.
And you like these. You like these. They've been working out for you? Like
I love it because it, again, the market scares me. The short-term rentals are wonderful return, but it's a freaking lot of work. It's not passive investing. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It absolutely is. So
armchairing it.
I don't claim to understand it. I know, Steve, I think what I've heard before, you've done fairly well in it. I have way more in crypto than I probably should, just because, again, I like to see a 20% return one week, and I'm not that scared of seeing a 20% fall. I mean, I have time, and it's all kind of money that I don't need to have to survive. So I like the potential upside. And the one that I got Miso through, they do a far better job of vetting potential fundraising. So I think they're something like 97% they turned down.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
With this asset class, with this specific type of investment, I believe you're not supposed to do more than 1% of your annual income in it in a given year. They recommend that you have at least 10. 90% go to zero. So we're not talking about you lose a little bit. 90%, every dime you put in is just gone. But the ones that hit, and the average time frame is 5 to 7 years, you know, 10x, 15x, 100x, 1000x are all possible.
So one out of 10, you got like one out of 10. What would you say the numbers?
That's what it's supposed to be. Now, this particular platform that does, I consider, a better job.
Seed investments?
In qualifying in advance.
Yes. Betting and stuff, yes.
I think that one's Start Engine. They're at like 50%. What everybody thinks is, I got to hold on to it, get in early, you know, and then they'll IPO like Airbnb is going to do, you know, later in this month, and that's when you cash in. Sure, that's a possibility. But a far greater possibility is it gets acquired by another company, and you cash out that way and still make a big multiplier.
Okay.
That's actually more common.
Okay. Yeah, this Miso Robotics, I looked it up, and it looks like this robotic arm, almost like a dryer vent tube going down to a grill with a bunch of hamburger patties on it. And it clips that. Awesome, them accordingly, man. Right? Depending, you know, if you want each hamburger patty to be 160 degrees, this thing just runs automate and it learns. Like, it learns that, you know, this is exactly how many will fit here and like that.
It uses AI, and then the infrared that it has gets the temperature exactly right. So I believe you've looked at it more recently than I, but I believe it's like $3 an hour is what it costs to run 100,000 hours without a failure. Wow. But what you're doing is you're taking a time right now where people are more and more concerned about contamination, more concerned about health, handling things, and taking a person out of that role.
Yeah.
You're drastically reducing the chances of any kind of foodborne illness that can be catastrophic to these companies.
Yeah.
And when they're talking about minimum wage of $15 and the labor market's so tight, not having to deal with that is also a huge, I just love every part of it. They had originally started with Kelly Burger, and now they signed a bunch of White Castles.
White Castles, he was saying. Yep. Yeah. That was awesome. Hey, no sick leave.
No sick leave.
Yeah, it doesn't call in sick.
He doesn't call in sick. Yeah.
Kid never had to stay home from school. All good.
Yeah.
White Castle did an incredible job with it, I thought, because it started as just the burger thing, but they actually have them on a bar now, and they can agitate the fries. So they said this isn't replacing labor, which could be, you know, a bit of a PR slap in the beginning. They said this is to improve upon the customer experience and make it safer for our employees. So now they're all customer facing. They're out front. They're there to make sure things are clean and people are greeted and they don't get burned. They don't get injured.
It hits all the points. I have to admit, I can see why you liked it. It sounds so good. I like every part of it. I mean, as AI, it's agitating the fries. It's, you know, the people that are working, they can be more attention to the customers, you know. There's a lot.
It delivers a healthy Big Mac instead of an unhealthy Big
Mac. It'll get you an extra Diet Coke.
Yeah. No E. coli. Yeah.
Sorry, no salmonella here.
Yeah.
Gluten-free for salmonellas.
If you want that, go to McDonald's. That's awesome. Well,
got me interested into it and originally. And then I just went, you know what? This is a market that I actually still like.
Wow.
Compared to the actual market. So
Yeah. We were talking about that. We were like, wow, it was very interesting. Yeah. It's definitely a nice little avenue there, a nice little niche that I think a lot of people don't know about that, you know? So.
No, it is definitely not something that most people were aware that even existed.
Right.
And to the level that you can use it, it has to be all non-qualified money. So you can't be rolling over retirement accounts into it. You can't invest in your current retirement account. But it does have to be after-tax cash, and your failure rate's extremely high, and your liquidity is horrible. So it's not something a lot of people should be doing.
Yeah.
But if you can afford to just throw 10 grand here, 20 grand here, 5 grand here, 1,000 here, whatever, and then 5 years from now, all of a sudden you hear, oh yeah, that one's worth 20 times now. Here's what happened. Yeah. Here's your money. Oh, neat. You know, it's not you shouldn't be counting on it.
Yeah, of course. But, yeah. You're like, hey, well, I might be getting this money in a couple of, yeah.
No, I don't know if I can go out to dinner tonight. I'm still waiting to see if this goes 30x. Yeah.
Personally, I have them all slated at 10x, and I pre-spent about 80% of that just to be sure.
Yeah, just really commit myself.
Yeah, you know.
I'm committed. If I need it more, they'll try harder.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that sounds pretty. Yeah, so I guess this is it. Danny and I were looking into getting like this is before we knew what the fuck we were doing, but we're like, let's get into Uber before it goes IPO, initial public offering, and then we spend like 2 days on Google and we're like, I don't understand what the fuck, how to do this.
How does that work? How does that happen?
Yeah. Right. But this sounds kind of like that. If you get approved by the SEC, you can now get into these pre-IPO and then you essentially wait for it to go to the market. Does it sound accurate?
Absolutely. Yep. And it's an entirely different game because you're not looking at the same markers because they don't exist.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you're looking at valuations in past raises. You're looking at, you know, legitimate competitors in the marketplace and legitimate factors that could influence their market overall. But it's an area where in a truly efficient market, you know, in all your finance and econ classes, all available information should already be reflected in stock price and nobody should have the advantage over anybody else unless it's insider trading. Here, it's not all readily available. I mean, you can read the same things, but people aren't analyzing it. There's not buy ratings from this company and that company. So I just feel like there's more opportunity if you're willing to look into it.
Stomach it. Yeah. You got to be able to. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And this is in, this is like your play money. You know what I mean? This isn't something you're counting on.
Yeah. So yeah, this is not retirement. This is, calculated gambling.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Hey, wow. Well, let me ask you a question, Steve. You said you both have rentals. Do you have, all long-term or do you have any short-term, anything with Airbnb or VRBO?
Long-term. I got two long-term condos.
Okay. I ask, their Airbnb is doing their IPO.
They are. We've been watching that actually.
And I they sent out an email. I think they're doing it through Morgan Stanley, and they based it on how long you've been with the Airbnb, and I don't know if it's a volume thing or year or if it's the same for everybody, but the shares, I want to say they were expecting to be between $35 and $50 a share. And so I filled out the thing saying I was interested. I forget what the minimum was, maybe 5 shares or something. It was fairly insignificant. The max was 270. So I can get 270 shares in the IPO and most people can't. So I feel like, okay, that's a cool opportunity. But
I was going to ask you about that.
Some of the stuff that I'm reading. Yeah. I don't know, man. Titan is a company that I really like, and I read some of their analysis. They have a couple funds that they run that are more hedge fund style. They had 5 counterpoints to the big offering that were more compelling to me than the offering. It's like, I don't feel like it's a good value at that price, but I also don't know that I'm not going to do it just because I can. And I'm hoping there's some buzz out of the gate, and I would take 20% the first day and be done and not own it. And I think I'm hoping that's what can happen.
Yeah.
Uber.
I don't know. I mean, like, you look at some of these and I'm only going by ones that have been on the market for 20 years, and some of them just open at $200 and it goes down to 15, and then it just follows this channel pattern between $15 and $30 for the next, 20 years. And you're like, wow, some people got in here at 200. This one doesn't even pay a dividend. They're just screwed,
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't.
And
even
I question
know
the business model because I don't like what they did during the pandemic. They unilaterally changed.
Right?
Well, they unilaterally canceled all host cancellation policies, no matter what they were.
Oh, that's right. They did. So, yeah.
They had a strict policy, which kept me lower in the search rankings. I knew that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
They kind of yelped you.
Didn't me because of it. They're just like, oh yeah, sure. It says that you're supposed to get half the money because they canceled 3 days before, but nah, we just gave it all to them.
Yeah. They screwed. Yeah, they screwed all the owners, and they advocated on the side of the customers with that. That was a big deal. Yeah,
and that's great for the customers.
Yeah,
and I'm not even saying I wanted to keep all the money, but I'd have liked to be able to negotiate it like I did with VRBO.
Something
where we would offer, you know, some kind of future credit or a partial refund. It was, it's like, okay, their thought process or philosophy as well. Like, you know, nobody could predict the pandemic, so you know they shouldn't be stuck with being out that money. And I'm like, right, but nobody could predict the pandemic, so why should the money be taken from us?
Yeah,
it's right.
It certainly
absolutely
can be looked at either way. So I don't really like the company all that much, even though I think I'm just a big fan. I did buy Zoom even after I told you that it went to 130 and I thought I shouldn't do it. I waited till it was 300 and bought it then instead. I just like that. Companies that are verbs and nouns. Airbnb's both, right? That's how can you not be the leader in the industry? It's called your name.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like that verbs. Awesome. That's good.
Shows up on
Google something. That company's done all right for themselves. You know, you take an Uber somewhere. That company's done all right for themselves.
Yeah, very true.
Get by it.
Right on. Cool. Well, do you got anything else, Danny?
God, we covered so much. I feel like we could have Rob on a couple of times, man.
I know.
It's been fun.
Returning.
I need a beer next time.
I want to hear more Danny stories.
Yeah. Oh no, we got a plethora of them. There's some good ones when you listen to the show. So we got a couple of them on there. But yeah, I got a whole plethora of them. Yes. I got 20 years worth.
Entertaining stories, fun stuff. No, that was cool.
Yeah, no, like Rob, you're thank you for like sharing, you know, with everybody. I think you relayed a lot of information that people didn't know and realize, and just, you know, with the Airbnb, you know, the being an accredited investor, you know, kind of how you did things. And I think we should have you on a couple of times if you'd welcome it, you know, just because I think you just have a very wealth of knowledge that can be shared with a lot of people, and they could learn from it.
Yeah,
I'll try to fit it in between the scuba diving, the golf, and the fishing. You know, it's schedule over here.
I'll try to fit it in between all my first world problems if I could do it.
Yeah,
we couldn't go this morning because the and normally the viz is amazing here. You're talking 150 feet, but it was fairly cloudy because it had rained so much. I'm just like feeling sorry. I'm like, damn it, we couldn't go. Blah blah blah. Then I talked to my mom and she's like, yeah, it's supposed to snow next week. And I'm like, no, we're good. Never mind.
Yeah,
sorry.
I missed that. You enjoy living down there though. Like everything's like, that's great, man. That's great. That's what me and Steve are trying to do here. Hopefully soon here, Steve.
Exactly.
We found there's kind of two types of expats. And the first one is people that are living on a fairly meager fixed income, you know, talking Social Security and that's it. And they come down here and you can rent a two-bedroom place on the water in certain areas, or certainly ocean view, for under $1,000 a month.
Yeah.
Wow.
$700. Some places there's $400 or $500. Or you get the group, Michael Douglas has a place here that just want Caribbean waters, but not St. Thomas busy.
Right.
But we have a housekeeper that comes a couple times a week. She's here for 6 hours and she gets, what is it? It's in Lempira, so I got to convert it over. $35 for 6 hours. And
wow.
That's way more than most people here make in a day. So if you have any kind of, you can't come here and try to make money because you get paid in Lempira too. But if you have an income stream, if you can work remotely, you don't need very much to live here.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
I like it. We're gonna have to look into this, Steve.
Come visit.
Yes. No, absolutely, man. Absolutely. This is that's awesome. I just love all the information, and like we got, like I'm excited about getting you on again. Hopefully you can fit us in between all the activities down there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll pick a rainy day.
We'll make sure to check the visibility first.
You're right. they don't have the technology quite yet to be able to do it underwater. A little bit muffled, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Rob. Did you want to put in a plug?
Yeah.
No, I'm I just came in to hang out and have fun and, okay. and shoot the shit.
Just, right on.
Yeah.
you have enough clients.
Any way to get, or,
if anybody wants to travel to Grand Rapids, Michigan and has 16 friends, sure, look us up. That should be a big portion of the audience, right?
Yes.
that's awesome.
Great. Right on. Cool. Well, thank you for coming on the show,
Rob. Thanks for having me. Lots
yeah,
of laughs.
Absolutely.
Good
times. Yeah. Thank you, Rob. Hey, enjoy your time. I'll see, hopefully talk to you soon, Rob. Thank you.
Very good. Yes. You bet. Take care.
And thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
When you make the decision to do what you want to do with your life, just know this, because the family and the friends in your life do not share your vision. In most cases, they will be the first person to try and talk you out of what you want to do with your life. But know this, only those that can see the invisible can do the impossible.
You have time. You have the knowledge and the willpower and the discipline to get it done.
See, sometimes we can't say, I can do that. But what we can say, that it's possible that I can have my dream. As we run toward it, as we work on it day in and day out.
Why is it that we don't believe in ourselves? That as soon as things get tough in our lives, we start doubting ourselves. We start thinking that we're not going to make it, stressing, worrying, imagining things that may go wrong in the future. We need to understand the human mind is the most powerful tool we own, but it can also be the most destructive. And we need to learn how to take control of the direction of our mind and our emotions. How bad do you want it? You've got to prove it to yourself that you want it bad enough. It's got to hurt you not to get it. And that's when you're going to learn to conquer your mind. Your mind will no longer be able to say no, because your inner heart and mind are aligned, and now nothing can stop you.
It was hard, ladies and gentlemen, and I was facing financial difficulties in my own life. I was behind on my bills and my dreams, and I'm saying to them, you can live your dream. It was hard, ladies and gentlemen. It was very difficult to pick myself up each day believing that I could do it. There were times that I doubted myself. I said, God, why is this happening to me? It was very hard. Here's what I want to say to you. For those of you that have experienced some hardships, don't give up on your dream.
There's a fight right around the corner just waiting. You better learn.